Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple saw its first quarterly revenue drop in 13 years. Twitter's struggling to discover what it really is. Talk Show hopes you'll take your text messages to the public sphere. Waze is leaking location data that can be tracked when hacked. And six-second ads are the next big thing on YouTube. All that and so much more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1500, recorded Tuesday, April 26th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now to take advantage of their Mother's Day limited time sale through May 3rd. And enter promo code TNT for a free color upgrade.
And by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about all the tech companies that are making loads of money but still not making enough money. And we talk about new products, new ways to do podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Lots
of things. We're going to talk about
tech,
a bunch of stuff.
And things and stuff.
Yeah. Tech and things and stuff. I should have just left it at that. I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. And we are welcoming back to the show once again. Always love having Nathan Olivares-Giles on the show from The Wall Street Journal. How's it going, sir?
Great. Busy day. There's so much happening. So much to talk about today.
I know. It was like an avalanche of news. Mm-hmm. There was news that we expected. Apple earnings, Twitter earnings. Yeah. And of course, we're going to talk about those. And then there was a bunch of other stuff, new product releases. I mean, we were spoiled, basically. That's what, what it boils down to it. So let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the things that we talked about yesterday, actually. As expected, Apple's earnings were released today and they weren't so hot. In fact, it's the first drop in quarterly revenue for the company since 2003. iPhone shipments dropped 16% compared to last year's strong upgrade cycle. More people seem to be resisting the upgrade this time around. That's according to Apple CFO Luca Maestri. iPad shipments also fell 19% year over year, and Mac sales dropped 12%, drops all around, including the stock, which dropped 7%. At least at my last checking about an hour and a half ago in after hours trading, that's basically 7% amounts to $40 billion. No big deal.
Yeah, I like how Quartz pointed out that that's Netflix. Like, that's the value of Netflix.
They dropped the Netflix.
Yeah, just one Netflix.
Yeah. I don't know. So, Nathan, I mean, I have to imagine, I mean, it's Apple, right? Like, they rebound on this kind of stuff, or I imagine they would. It's been a really long time since they've seen this kind of drop. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they're going to be okay. I mean, they're forecasting that the next quarter is also going to be down, so it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. But honestly, I kind of feel like there's been high expectations placed on Apple for so long, and that hasn't always helped the company with investors. You know, even when they like beat sales, if they don't, you know, have a large enough profit margin, then people are disappointed. So I think low expectations in a weird way might actually help take a little bit of pressure off of Apple for a little bit. But it's going to get worse before it gets better for sure, based off of basically what they're forecasting for the next quarter after this.
It is so interesting how we want so badly to put a story around this. It's like, oh, it's tough times for this company that made $10 billion last quarter.
But they just lost $40 billion like that.
Yes, it's a lot. But yeah, they brought in $50.6 billion. Like,
the numbers are so far outside of anything that we can kind of comprehend on a personal level.
Yes. You know, when we talked to Renee Ritchie yesterday, he said, you know, everyone's trying to put a story around it. Maybe services are the story. Maybe Apple Music is the story, and there's numbers there. They have 13 million paying subscribers, which seems great coming from zero last year, but Spotify has 30 million. So, you know, they're not there yet.
analysts seem to be looking for a new category. Of course, now they're jumping to, okay, well, then iPhone, I guess that's not the money-making thing. So what's the next category? VR, virtual reality, of which we've heard nothing official from Apple. Apple's self-driving car, of which we've heard nothing official from Apple. Live TV service, which we've been expecting, hasn't happened. Any of these going to swoop in any time in the next couple of years? Do you think that's even conceivable to think that they could? And if they did, I mean, is one of those the new category?
I really think something has to happen here. I mean, they've been talking about television forever. And with the Apple TV, which has been relatively successful, the new version anyways, you know, they've really pushed apps. And so we really need to see developers come up in a big way and get real creative there. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure at Apple at the Worldwide Developers Conference here pretty soon to really kind of lay out that vision and connect those dots to get everybody on board. I think this also puts more pressure on the iPhone 7 because, you know, the fact of the matter is that a TV service could be great, but for Apple, it's not a matured, you know, situation yet. And Apple TV isn't a fully fleshed out, matured gaming platform, much less, you know, video streaming platform yet, even though they've been at it for years, right? The Apple Watch still feels like a product that is kind of in a prototype type stage. But really, I think the iPhone 7 is where the pressure is going to be in the immediate term. The iPhone 6 set so many records and set the bar so high that when the iPhone 6S came out and sales weren't as high, I think that's kind of what we're seeing here play out. So now the sales slump is getting priced into the stock. I think it just puts more pressure on the iPhone 7. And I'd be curious to see if Apple sticks to this, you know, regular S update, or if they're going to move to maybe, you know, bigger updates for 7 and the subsequent phones because of these sorts of maybe a loss of excitement from consumers.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk a little bit about how easy Apple is making it to upgrade their phone. Let's move on to Twitter. Twitter also reported earnings today, and even though they added 5 million users, it might be a little too late, a little too little and a little too late, that sort of situation. Quality results were mixed. Earnings were up 7% from last year, but shares still dropped in after-hours trading. But they still have that Thursday night football deal with the NFL. What do you think about Twitter, Nate?
You know, I feel like I was expecting more kind of really grand, you know, innovative, different ideas from Jack Dorsey. And so far, everything that he's doing, you know, as he returned, you know, to the company, you know, I guess there's some progress being made, but I've yet to see kind of like this big idea that's just going to feel like the service is turning around. I mean, hey, streaming the NFL on a Thursday night is great, and people are going to love that. But there's already a massive audience on Twitter talking about sports all of the time, right? And we're seeing things like with Facebook, like this new live video push for them really feels like something new. You know, we're seeing their messaging apps taking off. And Twitter doesn't even really know what its core product is, much less expanding its business. So, you know, I'm not really quite sure what to think. It's great that they were able to add some users, and it feels like maybe they're headed in the right direction, but I've yet to see like this kind of really big, new, confidence-inspiring vision come from the company.
Yeah, it really seems like any of their growth has been kind of tied to kind of some of their marketing, you know, things that are going on. They actually pointed out seasonality and marketing initiatives. Product was totally missing from there, which is kind of a big deal. And I mean, in the past year, they had 65 million monthly active users this time last year. And guess what they have this year? 65 million monthly active users in the U.S. So, you know, by the way, U.S. customers are worth a lot more than, you know, customers outside of the U.S. to the company. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot of good here. I mean, I do think that one of the big kind of big potential avenues for them is this kind of deal with the NFL. And they actually said, Dorsey said, I think in the kind of wrap up afterwards, that almost every league in the world, his words, you know, contacted Twitter after the NFL deal was announced. So, and I mean, there's some big money to be made in there. It's certainly a different avenue than they probably even you know, thought that they had access to even a year ago. So there's some positives there, but man, they really got to work on this whole user thing. And it makes me kind of like, I don't want to let go of Twitter. I don't want to think of a world 2 years from now where, you know, this Twitter that I'm very active, and I know we probably all are, suddenly, yeah, you know, becomes something drastically different or goes away entirely. Like, I don't want that reality. So make it work, Twitter.
Well, I think the live streaming thing is interesting because that's what they've been pushing. Periscope is what they've been pushing, and anyone can do it now, but you can also do it on Facebook. And then now YouTube, you open YouTube and you can press a button and you're live streaming from YouTube. So it's anywhere. It's not exclusive to Twitter. But I also don't see a lot of people doing it, even on Facebook. I think I'm wondering, yeah, if it's really something that that stars and, or, you know, people, journalists are going to use.
Kind of reminds me of 3D TV in the sense that it was like, oh, this is the big thing. And the reason it's the big thing is because, you know, us, you know, people of the press,
yeah,
you know, news media or whatever, we decide, oh, this must be the new thing because they're all putting it out. And so this is obviously the new thing. And then it, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, you look back and you realize like, that wasn't much of a thing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's what live video in the way that they're pushing it out actually is. And if in a year's time, you know, we're going to start to kind of realize that if you were kind of banking the success of your company on this one particular feature, I don't know if it's going to get you that. I think it's maybe a component, but I don't think it hinges on that. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of video, kind of, sort of, actually, absolutely, Vine is influencing the advertising market, or so it seems. YouTube is adding a new ad format, which means you're going to start seeing a new wave of 6-second pre-roll ads on videos beginning in May. The short pre-roll ads will target portable devices like smartphones and tablets. It's really geared at the mobile-first user, much like, you know, Vine as a service is. Google product manager Zach Lupe calls them, quote, little haikus of video ads. Isn't that nice? So it's like, I mean, literally, like, you could play this and it would be over in 5 seconds. It's a promo from Atlantic Records, and it's like a little portion of the song, and then that's it. It goes away. I don't know. I guess it kind of makes sense because in mobile, you know, we're constantly kind of skipping around. I think of like the Facebook video feed and and obviously this is YouTube, not Facebook, but you're scrolling through so fast. So yeah, it kind of makes sense to have a shorter ad unit. I don't know. Are you welcoming to this new way of delivering ads to your eyeballs?
I think it's actually kind of cool and kind of hopefully a different idea. I mean, you know, we'll see what people do with it. But shorter ads, I mean, none of us really enjoy watching ads, and we basically skip them after about 6 or 7 seconds anyways. I think that's about how long it takes before the skip button shows up. So now here's, an ad that is about that short. So right,
yeah,
as you are figuring out whether you want to watch it or not, it's pretty much over. So I do have questions over, you know, whether or not we'll remember it and what the stickiness of it, you know, for us, as consumers will be. But yeah, you know, it's cool that YouTube is saying, hey, listen, the language of the internet is focused around shorter and faster right now. That's where our users are going. Let's embrace that. And you know what, if advertisers are willing to try it out, maybe it could, you know, lead to something a little bit more inventive and a little bit more fun.
Interesting that you're bringing up the skip button, because I hadn't even considered that. I saw an article on The Verge last week about how movie trailers are starting to do these like pre-trailer trailers. So you watch a trailer and it's like a 3-minute trailer, but the very first thing that plays is like a 5 or 6 second boom, 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 you know, title, and then it fades out and then it goes into the normal trailer. So it's literally like an ad for the ad attached to the beginning of the ad. And that actually makes perfect sense, right? Because we have the ability to skip videos in YouTube, but you can't do it until a certain amount of time. This is a way of making sure that you get a tightly fit, you know, perfectly made for that particular pocket advertisement before you're able to kind of skip and move forward. And God, the more I think about it, the more kind of genius that is. All those sneaky devils.
Well, Geico
figured out how to get ads in.
Geico did it last year with those. It would like,
they'd all freeze in place.
But they were really not stopped, you know.
But those were really good ads.
Over. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, you know, like if you make really great ads, people will watch. And those in particular, yep. I mean, people watch those because, oh, that's, that's really unique. That's really engaging in its own different way. So
yeah. Well, let's move on to a story you wrote, Nate, about the iPhone upgrade program. What's the news there today?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. I would have thought Apple would have done this at launch, but now 7 months after the launch of the iPhone 6S, you can finally buy an iPhone 6S or 6S Plus through Apple's iPhone upgrade program online through their website, apple.com. And before, you'd have to walk into an actual physical Apple store to be able to take part in this upgrade program. And that's the program where you can buy an iPhone directly from Apple, unlocked, in monthly installments, and then you can use any carrier you want.
So why do you think they were trying to send people into stores?
You know what? I'm not entirely sure what it is. You know, if the kind of a skeptical side of me, the cynic in me says that maybe they were trying to drive people into stores because the iPhone, as we all know, it's the flagship product for Apple. It's the main moneymaker for Apple. And as these most recent quarterly earnings show us, it's the most important driving force in the company's financial health, right? So if that's what people, you know, want the most from Apple, what else does Apple have to get them looped into, right? So you might walk into a store for your iPhone on this upgrade program. You might see the Apple Watch. You might try it on. You might give it a shot. You might, you know, while you're wasting some time, walk over to the iPad Pro, or you might play around with the new Apple TV. So I think just kind of walking into the store, getting that experience, you walk by an Apple store in any mall and it's always full of people. There's always kids playing with iPads and stuff like that in the back. It always feels like a lively place, and they need to keep that going. And, you know, this is just a way to let people know all the other things they have to sell. So if I had to guess, that's what I would guess is behind it. But that's purely me speculating. They wouldn't tell me.
I know some moms, me, for example, that leave their children in the Apple store unattended so
while
that I can
shopping.
Do my shopping.
You're like,
yes.
You just play with the iPads. I'll go over there. I'll be back in 20 minutes.
Genius.
That actually kind of is. When my kids get a little older, maybe I'll entertain that thought. Or maybe I'll drop them off at the Android store.
Yes.
That totally doesn't exist, actually. Yes.
For sure.
All right. So Dropbox, as we know, loves the cloud. That much is true. And today it announced the launch of a new project Project Infinite. It's as if Dropbox and the next bit Robin got married and had a kid, basically. Normally, Dropbox syncs files directly to your desktop storage, so the files are stored locally and then synced to the cloud so you can still have access to them, but all those files are stored on your drive. With Project Infinite, all the files are stored in Dropbox's cloud as usual, saving your local storage for other things. If something's stored locally, it'll have that kind of familiar green check mark next to it, and it'll be stored on your drive. If it's not, it'll have this little cloud icon appearing next to it. This is just one of those upgrades to Dropbox that I'm kind of amazed that it didn't exist before. It's not fully rolled out. Some people are testing it right now, so this is going to be rolling out for Dropbox business customers initially, and we don't really have a release date for exactly when we're going to see this, but I think it makes perfect sense. I don't know. Do either of you use Dropbox, or do you have other methods of sharing files?
I do use Dropbox. I have my personal account and my business account.
Yeah.
And it used to be the only game in town, you know, and then especially for photos. And now, like, I use
storage
Google
everywhere.
Photos. And yeah, now it is really everywhere. So really, it's just sort of a parking lot for my stuff.
They all are. That's the problem, because once the cloud storage thing started kind of opening up and everybody was offering free storage and everything, in the beginning, you're like, oh, I'll snap it up. 5 gigs here, 5 gigs there, and then a few files go over there. Now it's just super messy. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Nate?
You know, I'm actually still mostly a Google Drive user. We use that here at work. We also use Dropbox, and I have Box as well. So I'm like spread across three services, and I'm like one of those nerdy guys who has it set up so it's like somewhat redundant in what everything that I have across the three, like backups of my backups in the cloud. But, you know, for me, Google Drive is still kind of where I go because of Google Docs, and it just has this like added kind of productivity element. And with this deal here, this is really cool. I think it's really smart of Dropbox to do that, but it still feels like, and you're totally right, Jason, it feels like something that should have already existed, but it also to me feels like something that's happening in the background, and I'm not really going to Dropbox to engage with their apps or to do work there. And
good point.
I'm just kind of like waiting for them to create some sort of product that feels like more than a parking lot, like you guys are saying. And, you know, it wasn't Carousel. It wasn't Mailbox. And I'm not quite sure this is going to be it for me either.
Yeah. You know, Tolly in the chat room actually has a pretty interesting comment on this. He or she says, if this feature is limited to Dropbox Business, which as far as I can tell it is, and not given to pro users, that will be the final straw. Dropbox won't stop spamming us to upgrade to Business. Now, speaking of Google Drive, they just rolled out, I think it was last week, the ability to select specific folders in your drive storage to sync, so that not everything, it's not everything, you know, all at once just syncing or whatever. So it's very similar to Dropbox's implementation here. And as you know, Google Drive, you know, by and large, like, this is hitting normal users, this capability, versus Dropbox, you know, requiring you to have a Dropbox Business account. So, yeah, it's kind of like one step forward, one step back, potentially, if Dropbox wants to kind of save itself and, you know, be more competitive, it probably needs to open that up.
I just got spammed just this morning.
Just now?
I do all the time.
Live spamming.
I do, but I was really interested in, you know, getting 1 terabyte. It comes all the time. And I don't know, maybe we got rid of the Twit Dropbox for Business account. And so now it's just my personal full of stuff. So, but I don't know. Yeah, it is annoying. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. All right, let's move on. Reuters reports that Google, Ford, Volvo, Uber, and Lyft have put aside their differences to form a coalition to work with lawmakers and civic organizations to push self-driving cars into the mainstream. So, yeah, an unlikely band of brothers and sisters in the self-driving car world. But, yeah, I mean, it's as good. We need them to be safe. We want to push the technology. I personally want to push the technology onto the roads as quickly as possible. Where do you stand on this, Nate?
I think this is thrilling. I mean, really, in order for all these cars to talk to one another, to be able to understand, you know, where they're at in relation to one another, there needs to be standards, and they need to be speaking essentially the same language, right? So developing these technologies in use, and I think it's fascinating. It's also going to be interesting to me to see how much they share and where the points of differentiation are as all this stuff progresses. So I think it's really smart. It's kind of a frenemies situation, though, because I know, like Ford and Nissan have teamed up to develop an alternative, like smart car operating system, basically to compete with Android Auto and CarPlay. This way they're not, you know, the only ones out there. I think like Toyota isn't working with Android Auto and Apple's CarPlay so far. So, you know, there are some things they're going to collaborate on. There are some things they're going to not collaborate on. There will be some situations where they're bringing in but still competing. But it makes sense. I mean, in order for all this stuff to grow, there has to be those standards, and there has to be some shared ideas and technologies. So I'm really, really super excited to see where this goes. At the same time, I'm a kind of a car guy, so I'm a little conflicted inside, because I just really love driving. And the idea of not being able to drive anymore is a little bit of a bummer to me. But I don't know, maybe there will be like recreational racetracks on the weekend to go play around in or something like that. I have no idea.
Well, I think that it really makes sense that the model of having a fleet of, you know, autonomous ride sharing or ride, you know, hailing services, that probably makes sense first, to have that. We won't each have our own self-driving car. They'll be like an Uber or Lyft. I think probably that makes sense. And then us out in the suburbs will still be driving our car. So maybe you'll have to move to the suburbs, Nate.
Terrifying. I don't know if I want to do that either.
All right. Well, coming up, a messaging app that feels a little like a podcast in a text message. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. With advancements in technology, we have smart cars, smart phones, smart homes. Losing your possessions can make you feel a little less than smart. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Lunchboxes, band instruments, backpacks, school-issued iPads. It seems like I spend the better part of every morning trying to locate items that my children have left at school, or left in the car, or in my parents' car, or in my husband's car, or at the soccer field, in the minivan of the person who drove carpool yesterday, etc. I have no idea where any of this stuff is. But this coin-sized device can help me locate all their stuff, and my stuff too. Misplaced keys, wallets, computers, even my dog. You can pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device, attach it to anything via key loop or adhesive, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. It's that easy. If you lose your phone, press the button on the Tracker and your phone rings, even when it's on silent. The Tracker Bravo is constructed with beautiful anodized aluminum for the thinnest and most durable tracking. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost items show up on a map, even if it's miles away. And if item goes missing, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. When another Tracker user comes within a 100-foot range of your lost item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is. Tracker recently introduced Tracker Atlas, which works with your Tracker Bravo or your third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a customized floor plan of your home. Save time and energy by simply asking Tracker Atlas where your item is, and you'll instantly get an answer. No need to search. Go to tracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Right now, Tracker is having a Mother's Day limited sale through May 3rd with their best prices ever. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you'll get a free color upgrade. That's TheTracker.com, promo code TNT.
All right, so everything is public these days. Almost everything. An app that launched today with, I'd say, a lot of public fanfare is Talk Show for iOS. Aims to bring text messaging and instant messaging, either or both, I'm not quite sure at this point, into the public sphere. Joining us to talk about Talk Show is the founder of the service and ex-Twitter VP, actually, Michael Sippy. How's it going, Michael?
It's great. You know, exciting day. Launch is fun.
I can only imagine the first day launch of anything is probably a mixture of kind of excitement and fear, because you never know what to expect. So first things first, before we get to kind of all the interesting stuff on Talk Show, the really important stuff, how did Taylor Swift influence the creation of Talk Show?
All right. So I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. A bunch of friends of mine know that about me, listen to her all the time, follow her on Twitter, on Instagram and Tumblr and all the other places usually follow people. And she had this great, I saw a show with her and Ed Sheeran, and they're obviously friends, and he toured with her. And then I saw an Instagram post that was a screenshot of an iMessage conversation between Taylor and Ed. And it was, it's three or four messages long, but it's funny, and it's personal. And, basically you look at it and you're like, those two are really good at texting. So it's like, wouldn't you actually want to see those? So some of the impetus towards what we launched today, which is Talk Show.
So explain a little bit just the service in general. How do you envision this kind of fitting into? I always kind of consider the social kind of the public sharing landscape to be pretty crowded at this point. I feel like there are so many services. Where does this fit in specifically?
Sure. So Talk Show is about texting in public. We think that there are people in the world that are like incredibly good at texting, and if they had a platform where they could do it in public, they could build an audience doing it. Conversation is the way that we connect with each other. It's the way that we share ideas, like we're doing it right now. And I think that messaging is how we have conversations today. So we want to take this simple thing that people do with their friends or with people they know and they trust, and essentially give them a platform to do that in front of an audience. The whole essentially notion of people having conversations together, it's really simple, and we want to turn that into media.
It does feel a little bit like a decade ago when, we were all sitting around talking and saying, wow, our conversations are interesting. We should start a podcast.
Wow, we are hilarious.
do you see the connection to podcasting?
Oh, totally, totally. So, my background, I have a long history in working in social media stuff, and so I love giving people tools to express themselves and to build an audience. And, I've been a long time kind of podcast listener and love the podcasts where people actually just they know each other well, they know a topic well, and they talk with each other, and it can be really, really informative and entertaining and engaging. So we think that that can happen in text, and we think that new types of conversation can happen in text that are different than what happens in podcasts or what happens in a video show like the show.
Nate, you are funny on Twitter. Can you imagine using this, taking your funny to a place where people couldn't, I guess that's the other benefit of Talk Show is you don't have always people butting kind of in.
Interjecting.
Yeah, you have to invite them.
It's curated somewhat.
Nate, could you see taking your Twitter show to Talk Show?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it really depends on who else is there to a certain extent, right? I see a lot of conversations folding out over Twitter, and it's really fun to observe sometimes. and see, you know, whether it's actual journalists doing interviews over it or musicians interacting with one another or, you know, Kanye West making public pleas to Mark Zuckerberg to, you know, fund his projects and things like this. I mean, there is sort of a little bit of a public voyeurism on other people's conversations that's already taking place. But I think in order for this to take off, I really feel like I almost need to see some kind of momentum there first. It has to be a place where people go in order to see these conversations. So I think the idea is an interesting one, but I really guess I kind of wonder, you know, what are you going to do to pull people in to get them to have those conversations there? Because right now there are lots of other places where these things are kind of already happening.
Yeah, that's a great, man, it's a great question. I mean, step one, make the app available to people, right? So without it actually being available, it's very hard to actually pull people in and have conversations. So, you know, we've got a lot of plans of you know, places and people that we want to go reach out to and folks that we think would be great on the platform. And so just stay tuned. We'll hopefully have a lot of really interesting conversations. I totally agree. Like, you know, there's we think that this would be a great place for comedians and entertainers and actors and, you know, cast of a TV show or bands to have a conversation with each other and do it in a way where they can talk with each other and feel safe and talk, you know, having that conversation, but other people can peer in and provide feedback. So
kind of feels to me like maybe one of the ideas that I would have liked to have seen come from Twitter itself. I mean, I'm still waiting for them to really kind of show us some new things that are built on top of, you know, this existing community they already have. This seems like it could be really interesting. The concept of curating the conversation, hopefully when people open the app, they'll see conversations already taking place they might want to check out. And if so, I feel like that could make it something that gains some traction. But that's going to be a pretty big hurdle for you guys to really build that audience.
Yeah, we have a lot of work to do. Day one.
Yes, congrats for shipping, first of all, because the shipping is a pretty big hurdle to overcome initially. Now, you guys have been testing this for a little while behind the scenes anyways. Have you noticed that, I mean, just in your estimation from your feedback from users and stuff, do people treat their conversations on talk show differently than they conduct their normal kind of text messaging? Because I think that's actually kind of a critical component here, is that it's a service to kind of share that messaging, you know, with the world when people are okay with that. But, you know, it kind of also hinges on the fact that they are who they would be in their normal messaging environment. Have you seen that?
Yeah, we've seen it. I think that there's, we had a small group of folks that were testing. We saw some performative aspect, right? You know that you're on stage, you know that this is in public, and so you kind of up your game a little bit, right? And the people that are good at it are going to up their game a little bit, and, you know, try to be a little bit funny, try to be fast, try to be clever, use animated GIFs, like, you know, punctuate with emoji, like they're, you know, they essentially try to raise their game, and so. You know, that combined with like the normal kind of, like, it looks like a messaging client, right? You're in there, mm-hmm. and it's like back and forth, and it feels natural, and it feels like I can actually let my guard down and have kind of a natural conversation here. It's that, I think that tension is going to be really interesting and fun.
What I like about it is just the aspect that, you know, one of the problems with Twitter is how easy it is for someone to say something very nasty to you and elevate it to suddenly where everyone else can see it, you know, with a simple mm-hmm. @symbol. And, you know, that's the way they started, and they can't back off from that now, because then it's like, that's what the platform is for. But you're starting in an element like there are people performing, and just as if they're on somewhat of a stage. So it's not everybody, you know, and that's a different kind of community. And that solves a big problem, where it's like, whenever you start to say, like, on Reddit or Twitter or any place that, you know, this community is getting horrible, people are saying horrible things to everyone because everybody has a voice. And then you say, well, let's take some voices away. And then, you know, then it's a free speech issue. But you're starting at a place where it's not. It's like, I don't get to stand up at, you know, on Broadway at the cast of Hamilton and say, you're ugly. You know, like, that's...
I mean, you could. You'll get kicked out.
I could, but I would get kicked out. And, you know, I have to be invited onto the stage of Hamilton, yeah. which is my dream. But so I think that from an abuse perspective, I think this is a really interesting model.
Well, I think it's also... people want to have conversation in a fun and enjoyable way, right? And so when they want to do that, like, have those conversations online in a fun, enjoyable way. And so, and when you actually constrain it to the people that you've invited and the folks that are actually, you know, in there as a co-host with you in your talk show, and, you know, that can be a really great way to have a conversation and then, you know, share that online.
It's interesting to me because it seems like there's a little bit of kind of a trend going on right now. Like, we've done so many things with social, and now what's happening, like, I think it was last month, an app called Shorts was launched on iOS that basically allows you to publicize your camera roll. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're and then, of course, talk show, you know, aims at kind of bringing kind of messaging, the messaging platform, to a public sphere. It's just, it's interesting that in a time when so many people are so concerned about certain aspects of privacy, at the same time, people are also kind of okay with taking these things that were once so private and just kind of putting them out there for everybody to follow and everything like that. Why do you think that is? Why is there this kind of two-sided, I don't know, view on privacy right now?
I don't know. I think we've had that two-sided view on privacy for a long time. I mean, I started, you know, blogging 20 or whatever years ago, and back then people were like, "Well, why would anyone ever put their diary online?" Right? Like, and that was essentially what people thought of as blogs then. It was like, "Oh, it's just this personal diary and personal publishing. Like, why would anybody do that? Who would actually read that?" And out of that came really interesting media, right? So, I think that there's this trend of, like, how do you, you know, people that want to put their lives out there and want to actually express themselves in public are looking for platforms to do that. Just like, you know, you share a video on YouTube or Vine, and you share on Snapchat, and you share, like, what's happening in your life on Twitter. Like, having conversation in public is another thing that I think people are going to be willing to do. At least that's the bet we're making.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very interesting stuff. I'll be very curious to kind of follow along. I've got my iPad. I am an Android guy. Do you have an Android version?
Not yet.
Someone down the line, maybe. Okay.
But, you know, right, he got his iPad out for this.
I did.
Never a day goes by when an app just launches on iOS Android. And he actually got his iPad out of storage for this
All
one.
Right.
So.
Oh, look, we can actually see. Oh, yeah.
There we go. I can show you. I put myself in an astronaut hat for this show, for this app, okay?
Look good in that.
All right. Thank you. This is I'm like a talk show astronaut in this picture. Michael Sippy, it's just a great pleasure getting you on the show to talk a little bit about talk show. Tell people where they can find the app, and sure, if they want to follow you, where they can find you.
Yeah. Our talk show at talkshow.im. We're at talk show on Twitter, and I'm at Sippy on Twitter.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks,
and best of luck.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.
See ya.
Well, on yesterday's show, I said that we didn't mind that there were only two main mobile operating systems because they were both great. But I also said that doesn't go with cable companies because everybody hates their cable company. And I invited you to email me if you did not hate your cable company. Tim wrote in to say the big difference between having two smartphone OSs and two national cable providers is that for probably well over 99% of smartphone users, they are free to switch between iOS and Android. And the most populated parts of the country have coverage from at least a couple of carriers, if not all the national ones, and the national carriers will pay your termination fees most of the time when you switch. I do love my cable company, Tim says, but I'm probably an outlier because in my city we have a choice of three providers: Comcast, Wide Open West, and AT&T UVerse. He didn't tell me which one he loved, but frankly, I think the fact that I do have a small regional carrier and a real competition contributes a lot to that.
Having some sort of choice is actually a really good thing, and I think you're kind of spoiled compared to a lot of people. You know, in some places you just don't have that kind of choice, especially having kind of a local independent carrier up against the behemoths.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always that easy. So I think you're lucky, but that's yeah.
What do you think about yesterday?
Somebody likes their cable company.
Yeah.
I knew it had to happen.
Do you like your cable company, Nate?
I don't have a cable company. That's how much I hate cable companies. I'm a cord cutter. So, you know, I subscribe to a few subscription services, and then I basically share some of the logins that I subscribe for with some of my friends who pay for cable so that I can get on stuff like HBO Go and all these things.
And
so
how do you get your internet?
I'm an outlaw. Yeah, I'm an outlaw. I do it. Oh, my internet? I get that from Comcast, and it's not an enjoyable experience at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I
can't escape these.
Yeah, I know. It's tough, right? I got rid of Comcast Video, but I'm still with Comcast for internet. I need to make the jump. I got to do it.
I like the regional thing that you were saying, though, because I actually had a regional or, I guess, local internet service provider when I at a different neighborhood I lived in San Francisco. They were called Monkey Brains, and they were fantastic, and yeah, they were super responsive, and they had a really great prices. And then I moved into a different neighborhood, and they weren't available there. And I literally had essentially no other choice but to go with one of the big guys. So, I think there's something to what your reader said there in having a local, less gigantic option.
Yeah, I think I used Monkey Brains when I lived in the city in 1998. That. Like, it was, yeah.
Monkey Brains.
I know.
The early days of the internet, 1998.
Yeah.
So it gets even more confusing, at least for me, because, like, I have Comcast for the high-speed internet and whatever. I like the internet. I'm not too much of a fan of Comcast itself. The alternative is SonicNet, which is kind of a local and a good option. Problem is, in my area of Petaluma, SonicNet internet is driven by AT&T underneath. And so then I get all confused. I'm like, well, I don't know what's better then. Because if I'm doing SonicNet, sure, I'm doing it through SonicNet, but it's still going through AT&T. And I don't know if that's any better than Comcast. So I'm stunned into not doing anything, basically. So I don't know what the solution is. All right, coming up, how using Waze might make you the target of a location-sniffing hacker. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That's Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet that you'll actually like. It's actually a cloud platform. It helps you do things like share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, manage projects, all the things that you need to do at your business in the cloud. Anyone can add content based on their permissions, including these drag and drop widgets, a WYSIWYG editor that's super easy to use. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services. And those are all to just kind of make sure that only authorized users have access to all of that important stuff in private clouds, over SSL, and with 256-bit encryption, keeping it safe. Now, unlike other solutions that are out there, you can actually customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments, like Office 365, there's Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, all those file sharing solutions as well, Google Drive, Dropbox. You can even add Zendesk to keep track of or even add new support tickets. It's used by large enterprises as well as growing companies like User Testing, BDO, American Family Insurance, and ATP World Tour. So you should try it for free. Check it out for yourself and see what you think. It's igloosoftware.com/twit, or you can sign up for a live demo and you'll see it in action. And when you sign up through our link, you're going to get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. That's igloosoftware.com/TWIT. And we thank them for their support. All right, I'm going off script for this one. We had a last-minute change on TNT's Fan of the Day. Oh. So the normal one, I'm going to get to you another day, but today we had to pull an audible. Diami Plotki just sent this in, a picture, which I will explain. It's TNT playing on a MAME cabinet. Diami Plotki has, for the past year, been working with me behind the scenes. He's a woodworker, and he's been working with plans that Aaron Newcomb here on the Twit Network had given to me, and so I passed along to him to help build the woodworking on a MAME cabinet. We're going to be showing it off on the new screensavers in a couple of weeks. Apparently, he's done, because this is it all together, and I've been waiting a year to see this thing. I cannot wait. So anyways, he says, hey, Jason and Megan, this is how I watch TNT. And maybe it'll be how I watch TNT, too, very soon, even though I'm on the show. But, you know, there you go. Very excited to get that. So thank you, Diami, for sending that in. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
He appears to have a whole rack of screwdrivers, too.
He's like, amazing. He's like really good.
All right. That's awesome. I can't wait to watch all the things.
I'll let you play like Pac-Man.
Thank you.
Or something.
Okay, moving on. Waze has a privacy problem and kind of a big one. Kashmir Hill from Fusion wrote a piece today about the Google-owned navigation app. It allows people to track your whereabouts. She knows this because researchers tracked her through Las Vegas and San Francisco for 3 days. Those researchers were from University of Santa Barbara. They used reverse engineering, a man-in-the-middle attack, and an HTTPS proxy. and other tools that I only vaguely understand to do this. It involved ghost cars also.
Ghost
cars. The good news is that you can use invisible mode or another navigation app. I don't use Waze, so I'm not worried, but this seems like a big deal.
It is, because a lot of people do use Waze. And I know that there's some Waze functionality baked into Google Maps. Like, there's some data sharing there. So I do wonder if any of this, if there's any chance of crossover there. But basically, from what I could understand, they were able to work their own server in between the communication of the Waze servers and the phones that are out on the road. Essentially, they could set a server in between that kind of intercepts that communication, and then they were able to analyze kind of the language that Waze speaks, essentially, and then send commands to Waze to, like you said, put out thousands of ghost drivers in an area and basically simulate like a traffic jam. And in doing so, if you know that someone, say, in Vegas, as Kashmir was, all she had to do was tell them, I'm going to be in Vegas or whatever. They were able to kind of eventually do this enough times to be able to track her user and where she was. And they were able to kind of track some of the places that she went in Vegas, like to the minute. They would send her, you know, after right after she gets to her destination, like, oh, yeah, you just got there. We saw you do it. So interesting stuff. I don't know. Are you a Waze user, Nate? And if you are you frightened?
I'm a big Waze user. I should say big when I drive. I don't actually own a car, but I get a zip car, I feel like, a couple times a month, you know, for work to go down the valley and things like that. And sometimes to drive up to Petaluma. It's interesting. I've always kind of assumed that when I'm using Waze, what I was doing was public anyways. And so I've never put down my username with anything close to my real name. Right. And I felt like if I was going somewhere, super private and that I didn't want people to know about, I probably wouldn't use Waze to get there. But what I think is the most interesting about this story was the fact that previously this exploit worked when Waze was just running in the background of your phone, which is pretty much all the time if you have Waze on your phone. Mm-hmm. And then the researchers, the university researchers who did this study, shared their findings with Google, and they released an update in January that prevented it from broadcasting your location when the app is in the background. So I'm not totally freaked out, but it is certainly concerning that people can exploit it. Not a surprise, though. I mean, if something is out there and it's publicly broadcasted, there are going to be people to find a way to use that, maybe for malicious means. So I think I'm more kind of just fascinated by the prospects of, you know, these people being able to like fake a traffic jam. It's scary, but it's also, you know, kind of in a juvenile sense, somewhat funny too.
Actually, kind of. I mean, I wonder what the implications of something like this are when you kind of take this, for example, and apply it to something like autonomous vehicles, right? Like, mm-hmm. They're analyzing data out on the road, and that analysis, you know, it prevents death, at least in a perfect world, and that's what they're trying to work for. That analysis is important to making sure that this car doesn't run into that car and, you know, doesn't cause a fatality or whatever the case may be. So this might actually ring true in some form in that world, and that's something to be very concerned about, I would imagine, you know, making sure that there's protections built in there and then being very, very, very attached to making sure that those things don't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes me wish that maybe Waze would build some kind of like, mode where you could use the app and get the information, but not be revealing your location. Like, if there was an option.
I think there is an invisible mode.
Ghost driver.
Oh, is there?
Well, I don't know if that's it, but yes.
There's invisible mode on Waze that you can use.
Okay.
I don't know what features are locked out when you use that, but.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. Because, I mean, you know, really, the reason why Waze succeeds so much is because it gets all that shared information in real time, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's definitely a trade-off here that goes along with giving up a little bit of privacy.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's where all of the information for self-driving cars are coming from, our use of navigation apps. I mean, it's anonymized, but yeah, that's where it's coming from. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nathan, thank you so much. Nathan Olivares-Giles is at the Wall Street Journal. You had a great piece that we talked about earlier. What else have you posted this week that you can talk about?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. You know, yesterday, actually, I wrote about this really kind of cool one-handed keyboard that Microsoft built for the iPhone called WordFlow. And honestly, I was just kind of blown away that they built something so cool, and it's not available on Windows Phone. It's like everyone has forgotten about Windows Phone, including Microsoft now. It was kind of bummed me out a little bit. But, you know, every time you see a new app like Talk Show or something like that launch, it's iPhone, maybe Android first, and a lot of stuff's just being neglected for Windows Phone altogether. And Microsoft kind of, you know, having such a cool, innovative little feature come out for the iPhone first just kind of, you know, tripped me out a little bit. And then today I actually wrote a piece about this new feature that's coming to Twitter that allows you to flag up to 5 offensive tweets at once when reporting someone harassing you or making a threat. And it really feels like a long overdue feature. But again, that's coming to Twitter.com. It's coming to the iPhone. It's coming to Android. And Twitter made no mention of making that feature available for the Windows Phone apps. You know, I'm glad that that Twitter continues to address the issue of trolls online, because it's a real problem that it really doesn't seem to be going away.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for joining us. It's always great to talk to you, and hopefully people will see you on Twit when you're on next, or whatever other show you may come on.
Maybe even Talk Show.
Yeah, maybe I'll be on Talk Show.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, let's do a show.
Do it.
Thanks, Nate.
Thank you, Nathan. All right, take care. All right, tomorrow's guest will be the epic return of Becky Worley. That's right. She'll be on tomorrow's show. We're very excited about
yes,
that.
It's good, been too
good
long.
Good to have her back. That's right. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always take part in the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find the show on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
You can subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT, and you can subscribe to our newsletter at Twit. That's the Twit newsletter at twit.tv/newsletter. And you can find me on Twitter. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.